People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality. Shane Jones.
Reality isn't what it seems. I'm Dr. D, sticking aboard a craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes in different galaxies. Life is a bizarre odyssey. With a mic talking about philosophy. Well, Bigfoot is stalking campers. As a Wendigo walks through the woods of sharpened antlers. Using a Ouija board to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality.
Welcome, inquirers, to the expanse of open-minded conversations, with the hope of gaining a deeper understanding of the reality we live in. I'm the one they call Shane, and today for you guys, we dive back into one of my absolute favorite things to talk about, the Sasquatch phenomenon. And for this one, I'm bringing somebody on the show that hasn't been on the show before, even though I've had a lot of people on from the group that he works for, Small Town Monsters. And today, we dive into some fascinating insight and perspectives on the whole Sasquatch phenomenon, and we get into some very interesting theories towards the end of the show on the possible explanation of what this Sasquatch being could possibly be. But before we get into that, of course, I have to do news and updates and front of house. Nothing super crazy as far as news and updates go, but I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a personal update. I had recently taken a little bit of time off from the show, trying to reconnect with why I wanted to do the show in the first place. It gotten to a point where it was just a lot of work, and I didn't really know what I was really enjoying in it anymore. But after taking a week off, I realized that the thing that I enjoy absolutely the most of the show is taking in people's perspectives, their stories, their encounters, and just giving them a listening ear to actually sit back and hear everything that they have to say, and create somewhat of a platform to take in all of these different perspectives. And just like the name, Increase of Our Reality, the only way that we'll ever be able to fully understand, possibly even be able to partly understand this reality we live in, is if we take in everybody's perspectives. So that being said, I'm going to have some new changes coming to the show moving forward, new demeanor as far as the show goes. So that being said, this podcast has a strong focus on community engagement, so I encourage all listeners to share their own experiences and research on the show. So if you are a person who's had an encounter and you guys would like to share it, you guys can email me at omm.encounterreports@outlook.com, all one word. And if anybody's interested in being a guest on the show, whether, again, you're sharing your encounter or you're sharing your research or your own perspective or philosophy on anything, you guys can get a hold of me at inquiriesofallrealitypodcast@outlook.com, all one word, of course. And if you guys want to support what I do over here, a couple different awesome ways to do so. Number one, you guys can go and join the Patreon. Over there, there are multiple tiers. All of them have a 7-day free trial. So if there's anything over there that might interest you, definitely go and check it out. I have a lot of new stuff that's going to be coming for the Patreon, a lot of new show ideas that I'm working out. But the only way that that's going to be able to keep building up and make it so that I put more focus onto that is if more of you guys go and check out the Patreon. So if anybody has been a long-time listener of the show and you guys want to support my work, that's an awesome way to do so. Number two, of course, would be to go and check out the Open Minds Media merch store. Over there, I have designs for the podcast, and I also have a lot of different designs pertaining to cryptids, UFOs, aliens, paranormal, and other conspiracy type stuff. So if any of that sounds like it might interest you, go and check out some of the designs I've worked on over there at the OMM merch store. And if you guys want to receive 10% off, you guys can use code CRYPTID10 at checkout. And the third way you guys can support the show is by leaving an awesome review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. And if you guys, of course, leave a 5-star review, I will read on the show and give you guys a massive shout out. The only way this show is going to be able to continue growing and make it so that I can get more people coming in, sharing their experiences, and we can form this giant, awesome community of open-minded individuals is with your guys' help. It's all grassroots. So anything you guys can do, I greatly appreciate. And if you guys don't do any of that, I mean, if you guys share the show word of mouth, I would definitely appreciate that. But at the root of it, if you guys enjoy the show, that's all that really matters. And if you guys want to stay up to date on the show, you guys can always go and check out Inquiries of All Reality and Open Minds Media on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And while you're over there, don't forget to go and check out my other shows that I do, Bizarre Encounters, where Oren and I deep dive into a lot of different topics all pertaining to unexplained and weird phenomenon. And we also do a sideshow off of that called Bizarre Inquiries. So for that one, we're taking in articles, we're taking in clips, we're taking in questions, anything we can discuss on the show. So don't hesitate to shoot all of that stuff in. And every single thing that I mention is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, filmmaker Eli Watson. How's it going today, man?
It's good, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the show finally, man. I've done my rounds with everybody from Small Town Monsters, and somehow you slipped through my fingers. So, you know, after getting to talk a little bit at the last Small Town Monster Fest, I figured, hey, how have I not had you on, even though I've been seeing you around since I honestly started my podcast?
Yeah. When did you start your podcast?
Going on three and a half years ago, roughly.
Nice. Okay. Cool.
But yeah, I think you probably started up a little bit earlier than when I did, right? Like when exactly did you start doing everything?
Yeah, well, I started with a podcast, Cryptid Campfire, and we started in 2018, October 2018. And so that was kind of my big introduction into it. You know, I didn't have any experiences or anything like that growing up. The world was very tame and mild. The world of cryptids, you know, only existed in things like Monster Quest or Finding Bigfoot. And so in 2018, I got really into Sasquatch. And then I just said to a couple of my friends, hey, let's start a podcast, became Cryptid Campfire. And I was going to film school at the time. And so we started in late October 2018. And I think January, February 2019, I find out about Small Town Monsters. And I was like, that's who I got to work for. And so the next couple of years of my life, that was my goal. And then 2021, I accomplished it. And I've been there ever since.
And just out of curiosity, did you start investigating before you got into Small Town Monsters? Or was it something that kind of came with, you know, catching their interest from doing your show and just kind of collecting encounter reports and stuff?
I was not a field investigator, I guess, like you might say I am now. I still don't really feel like a field investigator, but I do go out in the field a lot. But back then, you know, when I went out into the woods and stuff, it was to camp. It wasn't to look for anything. I didn't even look for tracks. I didn't do anything like that. So, you know, because I was living in LA at the time, and so I needed to get out of the city and just enjoy my life. So I went camping. And so I think ultimately that experience of camping a lot, and then with the cryptid knowledge, and then me naturally wanting to make movies and going to film school, all of those skills combined together to make Small Town Monsters, what seems like it seems like a good fit. So yeah, I didn't get into the field until I started with Small Town Monsters. And yeah, that's what I'd say.
I mean, still a good start regardless though, because I mean, obviously you're not going to catch something every single time you go out. So if you start with that roots of just enjoying camping and being out in the woods, then even if you don't end up catching anything, you're still going to definitely enjoy your time out there. And I mean, of course, even just filming and stuff, even if you don't find any like crazy evidence, if you find like trace evidence and stuff, again, you still enjoyed your time when you're out there and you go along with the storytelling and everything. And I mean, that's half of what the film school is to begin with, is, you know, kind of learning how to storytell through pictures, not necessarily always having to use words. So honestly, a great combination of stuff that kind of led into something later on. And I find it kind of funny that a lot of the time it seems like a lot of people I talk to from Small Town Monsters, they kind of stumbled into it almost on accident, where, you know, they had something else they're interested in, and then it kind of just led way into what they were doing. Like, I know I had somebody on the show at one point talking about Alex, how he used to just be into making YouTube videos and stuff like that before he ended up getting into like filmmaking and taking like cryptid research and stuff seriously. But it seems like all you guys kind of have like humble beginnings, and that's always a really cool thing.
Yeah, I, you know, growing up, never did I think about Bigfoot. The only thing I ever wanted to do with my life was make movies. That's all I've wanted to do, and tell stories. So before I ever got a video camera, I was writing stuff. And then, you know, all throughout middle school and high school, I was making movies with my friends. And those are still on YouTube, actually. And then after that, you know, I went to film school, and even in film school, I never thought about Bigfoot. And it wasn't until, you know, I honestly don't remember how or why I got into it again, you know, because, you know, like growing up, I had seen Monster Quest. I had seen Finding Bigfoot. And yeah, they were interesting. They were cool. Like, it was interesting to me, but it wasn't like a dominating thought at all, you know. I never watched Finding Bigfoot and went, yeah, I want to be like Cliff and look for Bigfoot one day. No, that was never on my mind. I was supposed to be the next Steven Spielberg. But, you know, I'm not mad at what's happened in my life. You know, there's still an opportunity for me to be the next Steven Spielberg. But yeah, it's just interesting to me how it kind of, you know, people, one question I've started asking in some of my interviews, and you can see it in the Road to Discovery series, is, do you feel like you chose to look for Bigfoot, or did, you know, Bigfoot choose you? And the answers to that are pretty varied, but I find that a lot of people that I've talked to feel like Bigfoot kind of chose them, and their whole lives are completely changed by discovering Bigfoot for themselves, you know. And I'm certainly one that's like that. So
I mean, when did it get to a point too where obviously you went from not really paying too much attention to it to now you're actually out, you're doing all this kind of stuff? Where did like the point flip for you where you kind of went from just kind of believing that maybe it was just something kind of out there to something that you felt you wanted to be one of the people that could possibly prove the existence of this, or at least in the meantime, you know, still be able to fill people in on all the stories and all of the folklore and all the background, all this kind of stuff, and keep the stories alive in the culture?
That's a good question. I don't know, to be honest. Well, I guess to clarify one thing is I don't feel like I'm going to be the person who finds Bigfoot. I don't even want to be the person who finds Bigfoot.
Imagine all the ridicule, man. Huh? Imagine all the ridicule from people that no matter what you get evidence-wise, people still aren't going to believe it until it's physically in front of them. And even if it is, like, a lot of people still aren't going to believe it.
Yeah, well, sure. But if you're the person, you know, and certain people, you know, people want to find Bigfoot. People want to be the person who proves that Bigfoot's a real thing. And I don't, because I feel like if I were to discover it, there's nothing else in my life I could ever do that would surpass that achievement. And it's, I don't know. I like being able to break the barrier. You know, it's like, what do you do after you just, you're the person who discovered Bigfoot. Okay. What else can you do in your life that's just as accomplished as that?
That's always going to be slapped on no matter what you do. Because even if, like you said, you want to become like a bigger filmmaker one day and make movies, everybody's going to be like, oh, that's that director that discovered Bigfoot, you know? Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be the push to all your movies.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, so I don't know. When I started taking it seriously, I think is when I found, it was before we started the podcast, and I was getting into just reading more stuff online, and I learned that Patty in the Patterson-Gimlin film is a female because of very obvious anatomical features. And I didn't know that. I guess I didn't realize that growing up. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's weird. Why would they hoax that part? You know? And it got me thinking about, okay, so the Patterson-Gimlin film's probably real. What else is real? And, you know, I think you learn about the things like the Skookum cast and Stacey Brown's footage, and all these things start making sense and start being put together in my head. And I was like, okay, this is probably a real thing. And then as I'm learning all this, I'm also camping a lot at the same time and discovering for myself, okay, the woods are actually a really big place. I don't think a lot of people understand that. You know, I've been to like events and stuff where the crowd isn't Bigfoot people, and they always ask me, oh, what do you do? Oh, I make documentaries for a living. Documentaries about what? Documentaries about Bigfoot. And then it's instant, you know, people lay it on thick. Oh, you really believe in Bigfoot, you know, and all this ridicule and stuff comes in, and, you know, whatever, it's fine. I can take it. But
I've gotten to that argument a lot of times with people, not even an argument, but just like people will ask what you do as like a podcast or something, like for my sake, and you tell them what you get into. And they're like, oh, you really believe in that kind of stuff? And it's like right time and place with people that you tell somebody you're going on a Squatch hike that's out of your normal group of friends, and they're all like, oh, you're going to go for a hike then? But then you go to like the cryptid community and you're like, oh, I'm going to go for a Squatch hike. And they're like, oh, where are you going? When are you going? What kind of evidence did you find? Like, did something happen there? Like, it's just totally different welcoming community of people. Like, it just, it doesn't feel weird in one community. Like, it just seems like kind of the baseline of getting into the stuff. But on the other side, it's like way off the woo-woo train.
Yeah. So, I don't know, forget where I was going with that, but, I just don't think people understand, you know, how big the world is. People think it's all thoroughly explored, and it's like, no, you're looking for a moving target that exists in the woods, and the woods themselves is always changing. Trees are dying and falling over, and new trees are grown in place, and it's just you learn a lot about the woods, I feel like, or at least you should if you're going to look for Bigfoot.
Yeah, otherwise you're going to be in one of those situations where it's like a survival situation. You're like, oh, what do I do now?
What do I do? Or even that would lend its way to, you know, misidentifying stuff. I know a lot of people who hear things and they send audio and it's just like, oh, that's an owl. But they don't know that an owl can make that sound. You know, so they think it's a Bigfoot, and that you have to educate yourself as well if you're going to do this.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
And we are back, so let's hop right in. And I mean, one argument I always like to make with the whole like Bigfoot being scattered in the woods and being hidden in plain sight concept. I mean, look at a lot of different animals, no matter how their patterns happen to be. Like, perfect example is like a cheetah or like a jaguar or something. You know, when they're in the jungle, they may have bright colors when you're just looking at them somewhere. But when they're actually mixed into the woods, it's like they'll be right in front of you and you won't be able to see them unless they want you to see them. So now take that into consideration that, yes, you know, it may be an 8 to 12 foot tall ape-like being, but if it's covered in darker hair, it could potentially be literally standing next to a tree, and if it's not moving, your eyes aren't catching that sight. And that's almost like a military tactic, is that no movement, you won't catch stuff, even if it is kind of sticking out a little bit. And you'll see that a lot with people's evidence when they actually go back and they go back over the footage, that, you know, they'll walk right past like a glowing set of eyes that are about the perfect height up, and they didn't see it when they're actually walking there, but later on with the camera, only because the camera caught the glare in the eyes, that they were actually able to see it later on and realize there's actually something that close to them. Even if it was an animal, I mean, you'd be surprised at what kind of stuff can actually be as big as it is and hide right directly in front of you if it's not moving or doesn't want to be seen. And then you take in the intelligence factor to it, where it seems like no matter what way you look at it, Sasquatch does have some intelligence to it. You know, if they are intentionally knowing that they're hiding from you, then they're not going to move. Like, you're not going to see them if they don't want you to. Where other animals, you know, if they're looking for something, just kind of doing their own thing, they're not really intentionally trying to hide from you specifically. And you still can't see them.
Yeah, there's tons of reports of them, you know, of people seeing what they think is a tree or like a tree stump, and then it disappears. You know, they turn around and they turn back around and then it's gone. You know, it's like, how many times is that happening to people, and people aren't even noticing that there's a tree stump or a tree that's missing? You know, it probably happens a lot. Or something else I've been thinking about too is, I've had a couple of friends now who've had encounters, and where there was three of them in the woods spaced out, like three people, and they see something off down the trail and they think it's one of them, and it turns off and walks into the woods, and they're like, oh, what are they doing? And they radio for them and it's not them, but they could have sworn it was a person. And so it's like, how many times are people on a trail and they see someone up ahead of them, and then they finally catch up to them and they're not there anymore? So how many of those are Sasquatch, you know?
I mean, even something I was just thinking about when you mentioned that is the whole, if you're walking around the woods with a flashlight, instead of letting your eyes adjust, you know, when you kind of move through trees, you hit that blacked out shadow that moves behind things. And again, if Sasquatch becomes somewhat intelligent and they're curious, think about how easy you'd be able to hide in that kind of stuff, because your brain wouldn't even like register there's something behind it, because you're already taking into consideration the shadows moving behind the flashlight anyways. Oh. So it's like, as soon as the flashlight glares, they can move. As soon as you move in their direction, you're not even going to see them moving.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. So yeah, I think these things are probably seen a lot more often, and people just don't realize what they're seeing.
I mean, even people that just don't believe at all, having like slight experiences and just kind of throwing it off, like you hear about this kind of stuff at the paranormal all the time, that, you know, somebody will have like a weird experience and they just kind of wrote it off. They didn't even think about it twice. They're like, oh, that's weird that was moved a little bit. Same thing with, you know, if somebody's taking out their garbage or something like that and they get a rock thrown at them, they'll be like, oh, you know, it must have been like a drop that fell from a tree and just hit the top of this garbage can. They just go back about their day and never think about it ever again. And it could have literally been a Sasquatch on their property, like throwing rocks at them as they were going to take the garbage out. Like, I'm kind of curious how many people just glaze over something and never think about it and have actually had Sasquatch experiences without even realizing it. Or just in general, people that will, obviously you have people that misidentify a bear for a Sasquatch, but on the opposite, where people just say that's a bear and not a Sasquatch, and they just watch it run past their tree stand. They never think twice about it because they just thought they saw a bear out in the woods. Like,
Yeah, it's pretty wild, dude. So, I mean, and these are all valid points. It's interesting. I haven't talked to too many people about this exact topic, but yeah, you're right. I mean, these things probably interact with people far more than we know, you know?
I mean, even like small towns and stuff, man. I mean, assumably these things might even braid through people's garbage cans because they're big. Obviously, they need a decent amount of protein. And of course, I mean, they can definitely catch deer. They can do whatever. I mean, people have their theories on how they potentially catch deer and everything, but, you know, they could even just as easily, you know, sneak into people's garbage cans at like 3 o'clock in the morning, because they know the humans are all sleeping at this time because they've seen that all the lights go out in the town, and they could just raid whatever they want out of garbage cans and people wouldn't even notice it. They'd just be like, oh, a raccoon took it, you know, a possum got in my garbage can or whatever. But then it gets weird, though, when you have those out in the middle of the country type garbage cans where it has the cage around it and something goes missing, even though the cage is around it. But you wouldn't even necessarily notice because you wouldn't even think to look in there to see if anything was missing.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And I definitely think these things are intelligent enough to recognize patterns and things like that. So, I mean, if they're I'm of the flesh and blood camp. I think these things are an undiscovered great ape species of some kind. And I mean, you're talking about, that would put it at least at the same level of intelligence as a gorilla or a chimpanzee. So we're talking about some understanding of language, right? Because you can teach gorillas sign language. You're talking about future planning, because chimps have been observed to create stockpiles of rocks because they know that they might need it later in the presence of a predator. So, I mean, all these things combined, and I mean, I don't know how I feel about certain things like them having a language. There's definitely some form of communication there, you know, whether it's like a full-blown language like ours or some other form of, I mean, it's some kind of communication, but is it a language? I don't really know. I'm kind of on the fence about that, but already that implies a different level of a higher level of intelligence than a gorilla or a chimpanzee, in my opinion. So,
see, I've always assumed that they're either somewhere near us. I mean, be it some people believe maybe a little bit higher, but even if they're lower, but still higher than the average chimp, then even within their language, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be complex where they're able to have like these kind of deep discussions about things, but it could be something just simple as in like, you know, food that way, animal that way, food that way, water that way, like just literal simple, just one word gestures in order to get the point across. But I mean, look at other languages too. If you actually break them down, English is a very like complex language to speak, but a lot of other languages are a little bit more basic like that, where it's just a literal like point to a direct thing that you're talking about. So I mean, their language could literally be as simple as that. Maybe people are looking into it like it's a lot more complex than it is. But at the root of it, I mean, there is some type of communication skills. And this is an argument I've even made for them specifically, even maybe knowing to stay in certain areas, is that, you know, if you can teach a chimp sign language, assumably these things might pick up on signs that, because each sign obviously has some type of like symbol. So after they see this thing enough, they might start to realize what it does. Where if they see this thing that has like something that looks like a gun on it with a line through it, they go, okay, humans can't shoot in this area. Let's go hang out back in that area. And they might actually start picking up on this stuff, or, you know, picnic area or camping area. And they know what areas to avoid in a national park just by looking at these signs that have been the same for at least, you know, 100, 200 years now at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. Yeah. I don't know.
And I mean, honestly, just them and their curiosity for humans to begin with. I mean, I'm sure that they, again, like you said, they get routine to kind of registering behavior. And I mean, one good example of that is Michael Freeman's footage. I had his son on at one point, and he was talking about exactly what led up to the Freeman footage. And he said that his dad would go at the same time every single day trying to find these things. But on this one particular day, he had to stop and help his daughter because her car broke down or something like that. And he came up at a weird time. And because he came up at a weird time, these things got used to his routine. And that's why he was actually able to catch one, is because they knew he'd be here at the same times every single day. So, I mean, taking that into consideration for any Sasquatch researchers out there, if you're always going and looking at the same time, start scattering your time and you never know what you might end up coming across.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I don't think I knew that.
Always something worth trying, man. One idea that I've always thrown too is, at least a couple times that I've been out, I've kind of tried this where you kind of go out as a big group and it seems like it kind of stirs up a little bit of the activity. And then we split off usually into like threes, and it seems like three seems to be a pretty good number where you have enough people that you have like witnesses for something happening, but it's not too big of a group where you're not going to end up catching any activity or there's too many people walking, things like that. It just, you do the first time to almost like stir up the activity to get it so that they're curious and actually looking. And then you split off into the smaller groups so that they'll actually kind of come in because you can actually catch when there might be moving around you. And like the last time I did that, I mean, we ended up catching some weird footsteps that are off in the side of the one path that was in like a swamp, which it was on private property. So nobody was back there or nothing. So it was kind of weird. But, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that we split off, we had the bigger group, probably wouldn't even have caught those footprints. So going back around, just to keep extending this idea, man, to kind of what you were saying too earlier about people having experiences and not even realizing it. I mean, think about how many times people may have been walking in the woods too and been side trailed by a Sasquatch and just not noticed it because they're with six friends and they're just kicked out the sound of six different footsteps.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It could be that very well could happen too. Dang. Yeah. All good points.
And I mean, going into Sasquatch research, man, I always like to start with people's first films when I have like a filmmaker on, getting into whatever they happen to get into. I know that you said that you made some films and stuff like that in high school, which you're more than welcome to talk about if you'd like to, but at least for like your Sasquatch stuff, since we're on the topic, what was like the first film that you started working on for Small Town Monsters and what kind of inspired it for you?
Sure. Well, I guess the first thing I ever did for Small Town Monsters was Beyond the Trail with Alex Petikoff. And so we kind of worked together on that for about 18 months, about a year and a half. The first project I put together was, it's called Bigfoot Mountain. I believe it's episode 4 of Beyond the Trail. And Alex and I are in Oregon for that one. And we go to a place called Easter Island around Mount Hood. That's a code name. There's not actually a place called Easter Island, but it's a code name.
Yeah, if anybody wants to go and do the research, you got to go to that weird random island that has the giant heads. Like, go down there. Don't research this area. You're far off if you're not all the way down there.
Yeah. But, you know, Alex and I had filmed that in the same style that we filmed all Beyond the Trail. And then it was kind of like just we would switch off on editing episodes. So I started with Bigfoot Mountain. That was the first thing I edited. And then I think I did one of the episodes after that. I did a couple episodes of Beyond the Trail. And so, you know, those weren't exactly completely my vision, but it's fine. You know, I think the episodes I put together are pretty good. And then I actually edited something else. So Seth shot a series called Sasquatch Unearthed, The Ridge. It's about the Chestnut Ridge in Pennsylvania. And I put that series together, 6 episodes. And he kind of gave me free rein on how to put that one together. And I'm pretty proud of that as well. But I think when my stuff, when I felt like everything changed for me, is when I started doing my own series called Mysteries and Monsters, which is coming back. I did 9 episodes of that in a row starting in February of last year. And so the first episode of that was a play off of the first thing I ever edited, which was Bigfoot Mountain. So the first episode of my series was called Return to Bigfoot Mountain. And so I went back to the same spot and the same area and did more research there. And I think I'm really, really proud of that episode, how that came out. But yeah, so I did that, and then I got really, really burnt out on doing my series and switched gears and did a different series of my own called Bigfoot, The Road to Discovery. And I'm very, very proud of that series. There's one more episode of that left at the time of this recording. I think it'll come out in a few days after this episode airs. And yeah, I'm really, really proud of that. Now I'm on to the next thing.
Do you have any ideas of what the next thing you're going to work on is? I know that, you know, some people don't necessarily like to play their cards before they've actually started working on it, but do you have any ideas for what you might want to start diving into for the next one?
Well, yeah, for sure. The next one, I'm doing the Mysteries and Monsters Return. I'm going to do several episodes of that. And then I'm doing what's called Bigfoot Mountains of Mystery, which is a show about the Sierra Nevadas. And so I think what's cool about it is, one, I live in California with the Sierra Nevadas, which has a ton of history to it. You're talking about the Sierra Sounds. You're talking about early researchers like Al Berry, even researchers like Peter Byrne, who visited the Sierras. Lots of BFRO history there. Bob and Kathy Strain are there. And there's just, you know, video evidence that has come from the Sierras that isn't talked about so much. And it's honestly kind of weird to me that no one's made a show about the Sierra Nevadas before.
I do find that kind of weird, especially because of the Sierra Sounds. You'd think that that would be like a prime location, somebody to try to do something for, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, people have been doing stuff there for years, for decades, you know? So it's kind of like this forgotten bit, you know? And I seem to be finding that a lot, you know? Because with Mysteries and Monsters, I think the big thing I did was doing Southern California Sasquatch research. And so I did a really intensive deep dive into Bigfoot reports in Southern California. How does it make sense, you know? Because our environment in Southern California isn't exactly conducive to Sasquatch. It's not like the Pacific Northwest. It's not even like out east. It's much, much drier. But there are reports. So it's like, how does that make sense? And I discovered that there's a world of Bigfoot researchers that used to be here. And unfortunately, no one has taken up the torch. I guess maybe me at this point, but no one else really exists in Southern California is doing research, you know? I mean, like, you'd be surprised. Even Cliff Berrickman, he's from Long Beach, California. He was a Southern California researcher in the beginning. And so it's like, that's a side of Bigfoot history that people have forgotten about. And so that's something I got to shine a spotlight on with Mysteries and Monsters. And so with the Sierras, there's a bunch of history that I'm learning and discovering that people have completely forgot about or has been surpassed by something else, you know? Like, so it's kind of interesting to do this deep dive into an area and to see it. I mean, like, at this point, I have to go to Yosemite and I have to go to Sequoia National Parks because there's reports there. And it's like, I'm not going to complain if I'm going to Yosemite for work, you know?
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Just out of curiosity, man, because I always like to take in listener stories and stuff too. Out of the stories that you've collected, at least diving into Sasquatch or any other weird phenomenon, what have like been your personal favorites? And assumably, they may have come out of some of these areas, and that's why you've kind of laser focused your ideas into these areas. But what's been like your favorite encounter report that you've picked up?
Like personally reported to me, or?
Like personally reported to you. Even if it's a legendary story, like what's like your personal favorite like encounter story?
Sure. Well, I think one of my favorites is kind of funny. It wasn't reported to me, but it's my favorite for a couple of reasons. So there's a report from Southern California in the 1990s where this guy is walking on this trail. And I believe he comes around this bend and he sees a dark shape kind of crouching in the middle of the trailhead or of the trail. And then it stands up on two legs and walks away. But in the spot that it was crouched in is a pile of crap. So literally walks in on a Sasquatch taking a crap. And I talk about this in one of my Mysteries and Monsters episodes. And what I think is hilarious is, so with Mysteries and Monsters, I wanted to do cheap recreations. I wanted to call back to like In Search Of and things like that, where they would be like, they would interview an eyewitness and then it would cut to this dramatic recreation of clearly a person in a Bigfoot suit. And so with Mysteries and Monsters, I did that as well. I tried to recreate as many Bigfoot sightings as I could while I'm in a Bigfoot suit. And I've done this in public and managed to not get caught. And so I look up the location where this sighting occurred, where this person saw a Bigfoot taking a crap. And it looks very similar to the area right behind my house. And I was like, okay, perfect. I could just do it right there. So I go there and I pretend to take a crap while I'm in this Bigfoot costume out in the open. And I turn around and it's my neighbor's walking a dog. And I'm like, oh, wow. So I like rip off the Bigfoot mask and they're like, what are you doing? I'm pretending to be Bigfoot for YouTube. Like, what do you say at that point? You've been caught, you know? So
you just got to play it off. You just got to be like, man, the only way that I can go to the bathroom is if I dress up like a Sasquatch. So this is just my personal privacy time. And you guys cringed on it. Like, just leave me alone to pass my bowel movement in my Sasquatch suit, please.
Yeah, so that was one of my more embarrassing moments. But it's just like, of course, it's like I couldn't be, you know, the Bigfoot drinking water or creeping behind a tree. It's the one where it's taking a crap. It's like, wow.
You should have just played it off, man, and just stared right at him and then took off into the woods. Because honestly, if you're doing any like normal Sasquatch thing, I feel like the best course of action, rather than explaining yourself, is just to take off. So especially if you're taking the dump, that would have been hilarious if you just would have taken off into the backwoods. And then later on been like, hey, so I was looking out my back window and there's this, I think it was a man just taking a dump in my backyard. And did you guys see anything weird? Or...
Yeah.
Trolling your neighbors in a Sasquatch costume. You make it your own series.
Yeah, right.
Small Town Monsters After Dark. The prank show. Just got to put all your bloopers from all the suit stuff that you guys do throughout all the documentaries. Just put them all into one reel.
Yeah, that would be fun.
So, of course, too, man, digging into all the Bigfoot stuff, I know Alex hasn't had any, like, full-on sightings or he's necessarily seen anything, and I respect the way you guys do your research where you guys are very literal about the way you do your research, so it brings that skeptical mind in where I feel like that's going to come into the best results as far as possibly getting further with this research because, you know, not every single bump in the woods is a Sasquatch, so if you have those people that are more, like, literal-minded, then, you know, they don't feel like they've had any experiences, even though they may have had some experiences, but at least for on your sake, I'm sure that you guys have found enough trace evidence and stuff, but have you had any personal experiences? And if you haven't, then, what are some of the best trace evidence, experiences that you've had?
Well, sure. I've had my own personal experiences. I've never seen anything. And so everything I have is mostly audio. Well, not mostly. It is all audio because I haven't seen anything. So I feel like those are your two options, right? It's like audio or visual. You know, I mean, unless I'm close enough to touch one, which I hope I never am. But
sometimes people get the smell, and that one's like a really hard one because no matter what, it's like, how do you explain that? And if people have smelt it before, they obviously know what you're explaining. But anybody else, it's just like, I don't know, man. Maybe there's just something in the something dying or gross in the woods next to you, man. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think the one experience we had, we were in Utah, so it was Alex and I. We were hiking up to this alpine lake, and we didn't get this on video. We might have caught the tail end on video, but we were hiking up. We started later than we had anticipated to. It was estimated to be like a 5-mile hike or a 5-hour hike. And I think it was 7 miles up this mountain. And we were already starting at elevation. I think we were starting at like 5 or 6,000 feet and going up to 11. Oh, dude. If you're like me and you live in Southern California, you're like 1,000 feet sea level. So starting at 6,000 feet is already pretty brutal. And then going up further and further and there's less and less air. It's just like, that was atrocious. And then you're taking so much stuff with you. You're taking all your backpacking gear, all your camping gear, and all your video camera gear up this mountain. You know, it's pretty brutal. I'm not a big fan of it. But we did it. And so because we had started later, I think we started at like 3. It was dark. We were hiking by headlamp. I think we had another mile or so to go. And we're coming up to this corner and we hear this knock right in front of us to the left. And it was like, damn. And we were like, whoa. And so we turned our headlamps off. Alex pulled out his thermal. We're looking around. Can't see anything. Few minutes go by, we turn our lights back on. As soon as we turn our lights on, from behind us, it's two of them. And so we repeat the process. We turn our lights off, bust out the thermal, bust out the night vision, looking around, nothing. Turn our lights back on. As we do it, as we turn our lights on again, from the exact original location, front to the left is... And we're like, holy crap, this thing's like right here and we can't see anything. And nothing else happened for the night, but we had decided to camp there, like just off the trail, because we're like, well, if there's stuff happening here, this is where we're going to go. So we set up our tent there and stuff, and nothing else happened that night. Well, what I find interesting, like why we didn't see anything, because and Alex would probably attest to this too, it really felt like something was right there, right in the wood line. Well, in the morning, we checked out the location, you know, and everything looks different in the daylight. And we realized as the road curved up ahead, off to the left of the trail, it actually descended down maybe about 10 feet, just enough so that something, you know, 6, 7, 8 feet tall wouldn't be visible from where we were standing. If we had walked over and looked down, we might have been able to see it. But, you know, it was dark and we couldn't see that the path actually led down on that side. So.
And I'm sure these things are smart enough to catch that and know that. So it purposely set over there.
Yeah. We couldn't see it. So, and it was probably, you know, 20, 30 feet away from us. But we didn't know. You know, it's like, that's pretty wild. That's super interesting. You know, we're looking up here, you know, looking for the eyes or whatever, you know, when really we should have been looking down there.
See, and that's something else people don't take into consideration too, man, is that how many people have stories of these things doing like spider crawls or like dropping on the ground? It's like everybody's looking up for these things because you hear like 10, 8, 12 feet tall, but a lot of the time, it seems like these things have gotten smart enough now where it almost seems like they do like, they do the fire drop as soon as they know somebody's looking in their direction, or they do the slide behind the tree. But, you know, it seems like there's a lot of cases where people need to just look down. Cause even with thermo, man, I've seen enough thermo evidence where it's like 90% of the time people catch these things on thermo, they're not standing up completely. They're like crouched completely on the ground. They're tucked behind a tree on the ground. Like they're staying low.
Yeah.
Which again, talk about another smart thing. If they know everybody looks up and they hear these things, then they've adapted to know that we look up, so they go down.
Yeah. It very well could be a situation like that. So, I mean, these things are sneaky and they're smart, dude. And you have to remember, too, when you go into the woods, you're going into their territory. They live out there. They know it. We don't, you know? And so, that I mean, if you're getting into, like, research tips and stuff, that's one thing that you should keep in mind is, like, keep going to the same spot over and over and over again so that you get used to it. And so that you're aware. And so, like, you know, if I go to one spot tomorrow that I've never been to, and that's the only time I go, I'm not going to know if something's out of place. I'm not going to know if, you know, snow knocked this tree over or whatnot. But if I keep going to the same spot, you know, once every week or once every other week, I'm going to start noticing differences. And I'm going to, and not only that, I'm going to learn the animals in that area. I'm going to learn how the weather affects that area. And then I'm going to be able to determine, okay, well, this tree wasn't knocked over last time, but we also got, you know, 2 feet of snow. So it was probably the weight of the snow that broke this tree. And so you're not falsely associating things to Sasquatch, because I do think Sasquatch bend trees. But Sasquatch isn't the only thing that bends trees in the woods. You know, wind can do that. Snow can do that. But how am I going to know if it's one or the other if I'm not used to the area, if I'm not aware of what's happening in that area, you know?
Oh, no, completely agree. That's another thing that a lot of people I've noticed, too, is that they'll think that there's like a certain area that's been knocked down by a Sasquatch. It's just like a straight clearing out, not realizing that it was some type of like animal path. But if you go to this spot regularly all the time, and you see like the size of the holes, you start noticing that there's a scat on the ground that leads into this area, then you kind of know what you're dealing with. And even on the other side of it too, I mean, if you're trying to potentially follow these things, assumably they're going to be following where other animals are walking through, because any type of big animal that's going to be that size, they're not going to be a vegetarian. They're going to need protein to some extent. So they're going to be eating the bigger game that's out there. So if you start noticing the deer trails and where the deers go, then you have different little side paths that you can go down. And once you familiarize yourself with the area, then if you reconnect with certain parts of the path with the deer trail, then you know where you're at. And you're not just like getting yourself lost in the woods trying to follow a deer trail.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, yeah.
And, of course, diving into, some of your like trace evidence too, man. Like, what's been some of your best trace evidence that you've come across?
I think the most compelling I found was actually in my Mysteries and Monsters series, the first episode, Return to Bigfoot Mountain, and it was like, there was a lot happening personally at the time, and so to find this was actually, like, it was pretty wild. But basically, we went to this area called the Blueberry Bog, which is this pond, this seasonal pond up at Mount Hood. And the pond, it was September when I went, and it was at its lowest point of the year. You know, you're coming off of summer, it doesn't rain a whole lot. So, at least in that area during the summer. So, because it does rain a lot up in Mount Hood. But yeah, so the lake is the smallest, the pond is the smallest it is at that point in the year. And so me and this guy, Connor Anderson, are walking around, just looking around to see if we can find anything. We find this impression that looks very, very old, like a footstep. And we're like, okay, that can be a lot of things, you know, and it was... This is the situation. So we could tell that the water had been higher, and whatever this impression was made when there was still water there. and now that it was dried out. So it was like essentially like a dried mud impression that wasn't too deep. We keep walking in the same direction. Oh, there's another one that looks like a left foot. And then, oh, just right where you think there would be a right foot, there's one there. And it kept going. I think there was 15 tracks total. All of them roughly about the same size. I think it was 15 inches long by 8 inches wide at the widest. And they looked like feet, and they just went in a straight line in what would have been the water at the time. And then when it came out of the water, where the water line ended at that point in time, you lose the tracks because the soil's so hard. So I was like, this is bonkers. Like, we're probably looking at tracks that are like a month old, which is insane. And so, you know, we mapped it all out. I have photographs of the whole thing. It's absolutely incredible.
And this is going to seem like kind of an out there question, but it seems to be a common thing with a lot of Sasquatch researchers. So obviously you said that you're more of like the flesh and blood type. And honestly, like, my opinion is always swaying and flexing depending on what I'm seeing, what I'm experiencing, like who I'm talking to and stuff like that. Because I always kind of take everything into consideration because I don't know for sure. I haven't seen these things for sure. So it could be anything with the phenomenon. But it seems like even the flesh and blood researchers, they'll come across these encounter reports that are just out there and don't necessarily make any sense or fit into necessarily like what they believe Sasquatch is. Of course, you read the ones online and everything, and those are kind of hard to fully understand because you're not actually like talking to the person, seeing their emotion behind it, really understanding them. So at least as far as like your research goes, have you been hit with any of those cases where, you know, it's been somebody that you've taken in their story, you've seen their face, like you don't believe that they're lying to you, but they've thrown something at you that's just totally off the wall and doesn't necessarily fit into what you kind of feel Sasquatch might be?
Yeah, I have. I'm not going to recount the whole story. I only spoke to him over the phone, and he sounded very, very genuine. I could tell that his experience had deeply disturbed him, but I don't necessarily know if it's true. I don't know. It was a Southern California report. This person reached out to me because of my series, and he talked to me for about an hour and a half as he relayed this story to him, where it started off very, you know, he had seen something running up a hill, and it was the fastest. It was so fast, he thought it was a person on a motorcycle, but he didn't hear the motorcycle sound, and it was big and bulky. He said it looked like a football player on a motorcycle. And, you know, you hear lots of reports of these things being able to go uphill extremely quickly. So that didn't, you know, surprise me. The location he told me where this occurred made absolute sense for it. But it was, you know, the story kept going and it became more and more fantastic to where he's observing 9 of these things at the same time. And they're all white and they have glowing red eyes and they're communicating with each other. And it's like, I don't know what to make of that, you know, because that doesn't line up with any report that there would be that many of them in an area. And I don't, just staring at people, having, you know, a stare off with people. It just seems weird. You know, there are reports of white Sasquatch every once in a while, but, you know, you're talking about, there's essentially like 2 options to having white hair, and that's either it's really old or it's albino. And the albino gene, you know, no animal that is albino lasts very long because it doesn't blend in with the environment. It doesn't match, you know, and that's why it's such a rare gene, because it just doesn't survive. So for there to be like 9 Sasquatch that are albino living in Southern California and only one person has ever seen them, I find that very, very difficult to accept, you know. But again, you know, it's like that weird situation. It's like, okay, these elements aren't adding up, but this person sounds very genuine. So on some level, they believe what happened to them, but is only part of it true? Is all of it true? It's hard, you know, it's hard to say one way or the other.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
See, I mean, to have that many albino, you would assume that there'd be something where it's like through breeding, but obviously albinism is a repressed gene. So it's not something that's going to come out in every single member of a family. So it doesn't make sense for there to be specifically only 9 white ones of them, unless it's some other adaptation. But at least for like being that much of an apex predator in the area, I mean, that's the only way I'd assume that these white Sasquatches would be able to survive, where with other animals, you know, they have other predators, even the apex predators that are around their same size that might potentially be able to take them down. And if they stick out like a sore thumb, they're going to get taken down. But if it's a Sasquatch, I mean, what else in the woods is realistically going to mess with that thing? So, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of reports of white Sasquatch, and assumably it is albinism. And the only reason that I could assume that these things are able to make it is just because of their strength and the fact that they are like the top of the food chain apex predator, where, you know, they could realistically take out a human pretty easy, because most people that try to shoot at these things, it doesn't seem like it does that much damage. So, I mean, that's our ideal weapon when we're out in the woods. So if we're not even necessarily able to take these things down, I mean, add a pack of like coyote or a pack of wolves, I still don't think it'd be able to take down one single Sasquatch. So that might be how that gene survives. But again, the whole idea about it being 9 altogether, like it wouldn't genetically work like that unless it's not necessarily albinism, but maybe some other, I don't know, maybe some other adaptation where it's just specific to an area where they've adapted to be this color because maybe it does help them blend in better in the area. And I'm not familiar with the area myself, but if it's Southern California, assumably it's more desert-like area. So it almost kind of feels like it might somewhat fit that niche, where if it was a dark, heavy colored Sasquatch, you know, if it's sitting out in the sun, it's going to overheat. It's going to be very uncomfortable, where I almost feel like if you're in the desert, white would blend in blood better than all black, because if you're off at a distance, you know, it kind of blends in with the light glare itself. And it also makes it so the animal itself doesn't overheat. So, I mean, if you start looking at those outside factors, again, maybe it's not necessarily albinism. Definitely don't know where to necessarily place it, but I feel like there might be possibly some weird off the wall explanation on why it might be possible, though.
Well, yes, you're correct. But here's the other side of the coin is one, as far as I know, the only reports of white Sasquatch in Southern California are all folktale or literally an April Fool's joke. So all the other more credible reports report the typical brown color or all black. And if you look at the history of bears, you know, we have black bear in Southern California that are native here, and black bears are seen in the Mojave Desert. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, why is, you know, all black bear living in the desert? What's it? Why?
Yeah.
But we also were home to grizzly bears in the past until they were hunted into extinction, I think, in 1922. So like 100 years ago, there was grizzly bears all over. And so from what I understand is that the California black bears lived up in the mountains, occasionally dipping down in the deserts as they do today, while the grizzly bears were the valley dwellers. And so the valleys were, I mean, you're talking about the brown, big grizzly bear that is living in a desert and is living in chaparral. And it's not exactly the, you know, pine forest that you imagine a grizzly bear living in. So it's, I would be more with you if like the examples weren't what they are, you know, if there weren't black bear in the Mojave, if there weren't grizzly bear in the past in the desert. Well, but, you know, now to contradict my own self, because if you look at things like the mule deer and you look at the antelope that used to live in California till they were hunted into extinction, they had that lighter gray color that blends more into the desert. So I don't know.
I mean, even on another side too, man, where I feel like you almost kind of have to place possibly the intelligence of Sasquatch isn't necessarily apishness necessarily, or human. I almost kind of imagine that their intelligence level would be like where early man would be, like prehistoric man, where there wasn't obviously a language. There was still some type of communication skills. And these things obviously still had somewhat basic survival skills where they could pick up a rock and use that if they needed to or whatever. So if you kind of place them on that level of possible intelligence, then you have to also take into consideration the possibility that they might also be able to use things on the outside as a tool. So if there is anything that's potentially like a white powder that they could grind something up, or even just taking mud and letting it dry on themselves, you know, if they let the mud dry and it becomes that lighter color, then it might actually end up taking heat off of them. And I mean, you see this with like with different tribes and stuff like that in Africa, that they'll take like different types of dirt or different types of mud or everything and kind of like rub it onto their skin, and it ends up creating like that barrier where it reflects the heat a lot better. So, I mean, these things are somewhat intelligent. I mean, it might even be possible that that might be a possibility. And maybe when people do see white Sasquatches, it isn't necessarily that they themselves are white. Maybe there are a couple of the albinos here and there, maybe ones that have adapted to certain regions, but maybe there is a certain intelligence level where they know that if they cover themselves in something, it might actually, one, help them blend in better, and two, on the other side, reflect the heat better.
Yeah, I mean, I know elephants and rhinos do the same thing, actually.
So, I mean, that's usually where I try to come to, is just like other connections in like biology. And I mean, I try to like place that into Sasquatch, and I feel like a lot of like the unexplained possible behavior might actually be able to be explained through looking at other characteristics of other animals. And some of the stuff that we view as woo-woo or supernatural might just be stuff that we haven't seen other places in nature yet. So it's not necessarily that it's woo-woo weird or whatever. It's just that it's something that's hasn't been discovered yet. Like, perfect example is like animals that are able to grow back limbs. Like, that sounds like complete science fiction until you actually see it happen in nature. And then it's like, okay, an octopus can do this, an amphibian can do this. And then you start looking at, you know, other animals in nature that have things like they can see certain light spectrums and stuff like that. And we can't even see them. Like the most, let's see, like the mantis shrimp, they have the best eyes on the entire planet. They can supposedly see, I think, three or four different colors that even humans can't see. But that sounds like something crazy in science fiction. But then you notice that it exists in this one place in nature, and then it doesn't become anything woo-woo or weird anymore. And I think that that's kind of where we're leading to with a lot of the Sasquatch stuff, is that the unexplained stuff might actually be able to be explained through understanding that it's only something that's specific to possibly even just that one animal, and looking at it as an animal, being that humans are also an animal too. And most people don't necessarily realize that, but
yeah. Well, yeah, I think on top of that, it's also a unique blending of different features that you don't see in any one animal, right? So it's like you look at the Olympic Project nests, and the nests are constructed in a similar way to how gorillas build nests. But at the same time, there are long howls that people report hearing, you know, stuff like the Ohio howl. That matches more of orangutan behavior. You know, rock throwing is more of a chimpanzee behavior. So it's like they're all known behaviors. A lot of these things are known behaviors, but they're not all associated with one species.
Something kind of weird to think about. So prehistoric man to what man is now was actually a combination of a bunch of different forms of prehistoric man that all eventually combined it into one that lived through everything else. I mean, Sasquatch could potentially be the same thing, that it was a multi-breeding of different types of apes. And that's why it has all of these different characteristics of different types of apes. But this was like the end of the evolutionary line, I guess you could say, for all of the different features that came into this one specific creature. And just like humans, you know, we don't necessarily take into consider, we think of like prehistoric man like it's a chain that one thing led into the other, not realizing there were multiple types of like Neanderthals and Homo sapien that were all together, and they're actually like reproducing with each other. Same could potentially be said for these Sasquatch type creatures, that it was like multiple different types of apes that were all breeding together, and then they formed this certain type of ape, and then it started taking in maybe a higher intelligence level because it had all these different characteristics that all these other different apes had, and started using those to be able to fit itself into the environment better than those apes were potentially able to do.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. That's 100%, I think. Yeah, it undoubtedly would have to be. I mean, that's the way it works, right? I mean, obviously there isn't multiple different species of two-legged hominids walking around on Earth anymore, though we know that that was the case in the past. So if Sasquatch is, you know, a bipedal ape, we have some sort of shared ancestry. That seems obvious, you know, but what other combination, you know, if we're like a combination of Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon and stuff like that, and Homo sapiens all wrapped up together, what is Sasquatch made up of? What other animals or hominids do we not know about? Because ape bones are difficult to find. Ape fossils are difficult to find. So there very well could be species that we will never know about because their bones no longer exist. That Sasquatch could be made up of.
I mean, even the Sasquatch that we talk about versus what the natives are potentially talking about could be totally different things. Because when you get into all the DNA stuff of Sasquatch, they usually say that there's the unknown male DNA with the female DNA. So the Sasquatch that the natives are talking about, where they would steal the women and they would do all this kind of stuff, those ones may have been a different breed. And then once they actually started taking the females of humans and actually started reproducing with those, then that may have led into the intelligence factor that we know of today with Sasquatch, is that it's actually human intelligence factor mixed in. And that's why it went from, you know, all these reports of the natives seeing these things constantly to now it's like, you know, people see them here and there, but they've bred that intelligence in through having that human component, that it was more ape-like until they started reproducing with these native females, at least in the Americas. Obviously, everybody has their own different Sasquatch legends, but I definitely think that could definitely be a tie-in, that there was these two different chains that were going, like we were talking about, with humans leading into modern day human and Sasquatch leading into this modern day ape that we talk about. And then once that there was those two different established parties, then there was a reproduction between those two. And then that's what we know as the modern day Sasquatch now.
Mm. Yeah. Something like that had to have happened for sure.
I mean, there's enough stories of females being taken by them. And obviously we now potentially see it with the DNA. Like there, like you said, there is a human element to it. And I think that there's definitely a possibility that that might be where this intelligence factor that we all take into consideration comes from, is possibly the human side. And that's where they went from more ape-like to the Sasquatch that we know today.
I guess, yeah, you're right. That is an interesting line of thought I've never heard. So, yeah,
man, you got me going with what you're talking about. I hadn't made that connection before either, even taking into consideration just like the multiple animals making up Sasquatch. Because most of the time you hear Gigantopithecus, it's this, it's that, and it's just one single animal, not taking into consideration the combination of multiple animals that were able to breed together. And assumably, like, there is some type of a gap between apes now as we know them and humans now, because we wouldn't be able to reproduce with an ape and make a baby. So if Sasquatch is able to reproduce with humans, then there has to have been something that brought that genetic closer even before humans to be able to make it so that they'd be able to crossbreed with humans, even if potentially maybe that other DNA at some point may have been the Neanderthals. I mean, maybe what was left of the Neanderthals eventually ended up developing into what we know as modern day Sasquatch. And that would explain like the brow, the physical features of their face and everything. And then once the natives started coming into it, that's when they started getting those native facial features, because maybe the extension of Neanderthal man was that they actually brought the hair back because they'd been pushed out by the other side of Homo sapien, where we were starting to congregate, you know, form towns, villages, agriculture and everything. So they got pushed out because they were a more aggressive species of humans to begin with, at least from what I've kind of dug into with history and everything. So if they had to develop all on their own somewhere else away from villages and everything, then why wouldn't they have developed hair? So, I mean, Sasquatch could potentially be what Neanderthal eventually turned into once Homo sapiens started taking over the human genetic as we know it today.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. It's interesting. It's very interesting to think about.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your Squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptoteology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over, so don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Like I said, there's just too much human intelligence factor to it for there not to be. There has to be some tie in there somewhere, man.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting point about the stories of, you know, them taking women and stuff, and even the stories of them, you know, these women giving birth to these Sasquatch children. You know, they've probably. If those are true, then what would have happened if those Sasquatch children, like half Sasquatch, half human, and that stayed with the Sasquatch, they would have interbred into the population. And so, yeah, you would be talking about that greater intelligence level would stick around, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's even some modern day stuff. Like, have you read into the whole like Xana from Abkhazia thing? It was about the like Russian Sasquatch, the Alamasi, the wild woman that they had supposedly found, I believe, in the early 1900s.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So she supposedly had offspring from people in the town, obviously not being able to keep their hands to themselves, having a wild woman chained up. And she was supposedly able to reproduce. And I feel like that story, even though it seems like it's slowly getting lost in time, may have been our most common link to possibly being able to figure out this genetic tie between humans and Sasquatch. And I'm sure that there's been some genetic testing done on the extension of that bloodline. But if there is some of that bloodline around now today still, I'm almost kind of curious if you tested that bloodline, if it might potentially have some matches with that unknown side of the DNA that everybody else is testing over here in the United States.
I believe, you know, I think there are descendants, grandchildren, great-grandchildren of that. Dang, dude. Whoa. We got to do this.
Right? See, I'm curious if there's still that bloodline around and if it hasn't been diluted too much. But I mean, they can go back pretty far. So, I mean, there might not be an exact ping, but there might be some stuff that lines up with that unknown side of the DNA with that bloodline.
It could be. It very well could be. Dang, bro. Whoa. Didn't even think about that.
Next Small Town Monsters documentary, you guys are going to try to get into Northern Russia.
Dude, yeah. Oh, yeah, that'd go over great right now.
It's the border of Georgia and Russia. So if you get into Georgia, you might be fine.
Yeah,
you guys just have to wait a couple of years. So hopefully the conflict all dies down over there. And then, I mean,
yeah.
But they're into that research, though. So that's a little bit different, because I know that at least in Russia and stuff, they actually have like college courses on people that research Alamasi and stuff like that. So it's taken a lot more seriously over there. So if somebody was trying to do some serious research like that, I feel like you might actually get farther than you actually think you might with it, especially if you took the right avenues and possibly, like I said, came in through Georgia instead of Russia itself.
Yeah, could be interesting. Wow. Dang, dude. Thought provoking.
Hey, if you ever work on it, man, you'll have to let me know. I want to be a extended producer or something. Just be able to at least see the magic happen.
Dude, that would be a wild documentary if we did that. That's for sure. But
hey, untapped market though, man. I haven't seen enough people actually research the like Alamasi phenomenon. It seems like obviously every region has these different connections, but it almost seems like the Alamassi are closer to, they're still obviously Sasquatch, but they seem like they're closer to human than what we're looking at with like the North American Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know much about the Alamassi, so you know more than me on that.
I only know the couple stars I've dug into, but
yeah,
I know that you said you were kind of limited on time just because you got back from traveling and everything like that. So I don't want to take up too much of your time and everything. So I can always have you back on for a second round, because I think this was definitely a fun conversation. But before we start wrapping up, man, I always like to do words of wisdom from the guests to the listeners. So if there's any words of wisdom you could bestow on the listeners, to be it inspiring other filmmakers, other Sasquatch researchers, whoever you want to direct it towards, what might those words of wisdom be?
This goes out to potential researchers. Read books. And I say that as a filmmaker. Read books. You can just include a lot more information in a book than you can in a documentary. And I think it's important for us to read, because most of the information in human history has been written down before it was filmed. So, I mean, when you think about it, cameras have been around for a little over 100 years. Writing has been around for thousands. So it's there's a lot more to read. You know, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. So make sure you read it, get yourself educated on it, so we're not constantly rediscovering the same things over and over and over again.
I definitely agree, man. That's coming from two people that I see a big bookcase behind me and I see a bookcase behind you. So
that's one. I have two more. So.
Dude, I'm a firm believer, even regardless, man. Like, you can go, as much as I love film, as much as I love watching documentaries, it's like, if you're heavily researching into something yourself, you want to get into filmmaking and all that, all the information's within books. Because even just within that, it's like you can read over a passage multiple times. And it's a lot easier to do that, to retain the information, than to rewatch over a documentary a few times. And the way that I kind of see it is, no matter what way you look at a documentary, it is always fantastic for giving somebody visuals, actually making those connections with people so that they actually feel like they're along for the story. It really like sets the story in, because it has that visual dynamic to it. But on the other side too, I almost feel like documentaries are almost like a doorway into something, possibly, that mm-hmm. especially with Sasquatch and stuff, it's like that's the foot in the door that gets people interested so that they actually start diving back into the research. Because no matter how in-depth you make a documentary, it's like you're never going to be able to get it to all the detail that you could put into a book. But one, it's going to entertain the people that may not have ever read that book. And on the other side, it's going to inspire the people who are going to become the researchers to keep reading and keep researching farther into it. It's that good stepping off point for people, to getting them into this kind of stuff.
Yeah. No, I agree. So yeah, use me as a stepping stool and then read books.
Hopefully it doesn't sound bad.
Like, No. I just think it's a funny way.
And for anybody that may want to check out all of your fantastic documentaries you worked on, any future work that you might have coming out, or just follow you on social media in general, where might people be able to find all of your documentaries and follow you on social media?
Sure. All my documentaries are on smalltownmonsters.com or Small Town Monsters YouTube channel. My apologies. I guess you can keep up with me a little bit on smalltownmonsters.com, but the best way, I think, is Instagram, Facebook. That's The Eli Watson. So at The Eli Watson. So, you know, it's the one, you know, one, I'm not just only Eli Watson. I'm the Eli Watson. So
The Eli Watson.
The Eli Watson. Yeah. So,
well, man, I'll make sure I include all those links down in the show description. And I really appreciate you making the time to come on today, man. It was nice, after, you know, seeing you around the community for the past couple of years, to actually sit down and have a one-on-one conversation. So I appreciate you making the time after your busy trip. And I'm looking forward to getting into it next time, man.
Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. I'll be happy to come back on anytime.
If anyone would like to get in touch with me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can do so through email, which is inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media. Instagram and Facebook are the ones that I'm the most active on, or through the submission forms, which are available on the link tree. And there is two submissions forms over there. One of them is to contact me, which will go directly to that email. And the other one is to report an encounter, which will go to OMMencounterreports@outlook.com. So don't forget to submit those encounters too while you're at it. Anything you guys submit to the show, I greatly appreciate. And I'm looking forward to getting to talk to you guys on the show if you guys continue to submit those encounters and share your research and perspectives on the show. And every single thing that I mentioned throughout the show is all available on the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. I hope that it's connected some dots for you in your own reality, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
Parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, O'Reilly.